Hello, welcome to our latest episode of The DeMartini Show. This is the podcast for visionaries. You're in for another brilliant session with Dr. John DeMartini. For those of you who don't know Dr. John DeMartini, he is a human behavior specialist. He's spent over 48 years researching everything he could find in order to understand what drives human behavior and performance and the most efficient and effective ways of empowering and inspiring lives. If you're driven to make a difference and you love making progress in all the seven areas of your life, then you're in the right place right now. Today, Dr. DeMartini talks to us about how to transform self-doubt into self-belief and why identifying your highest values is key to growing your self-worth and self-belief. Get ready for a powerful presentation. Enjoy.
Every human being, regardless of gender, age, or culture, lives moment by moment by a set of priorities, a set of values. This set of values is unique to them. And this set of priorities or things that are most valuable to least valuable, most important to least important, is the thing that they are driven by. It's their value structure. And whatever's highest on the person's value list, the thing that's most important, they are spontaneously inspired to act on. They do not require any extrinsic motivation. They spontaneously act. They feel certain. There's no hesitation. They're disciplined. They're reliable. They're focused. They take action. As they go down the list of values, they become more extrinsically driven, and they require reward to do it, punishment if they don't. And they require more advantages and disadvantages to get them to move. Now, because of that basic structure of the values that each individual has, anytime you set a goal that is aligned with the highest value, or in at least the top two or three values, but the highest value particularly, unless you do, you're going to do some degree of procrastination, hesitation, and frustration. And anytime you do things high in your value, your self-worth goes up and your self-confidence goes up. Anytime you do something low in your values, your self-worth goes down and your self-confidence goes down. And let me elaborate why this goes on. When you're in living in according to your highest value, you become more objective. You become more reasonable. You increase the blood glucose and oxygen into the forebrain, and you see your vision of what you want to accomplish. You strategically plan it because you waken up the executive center in the brain, which is the forebrain. You tend to execute it without hesitation, and you have self-governance on the impulses and instincts that normally distract you, make you hesitate. But if you live in lower values or attempt to set goals that are lower on your value list, because you need motivation to get you to do it, you won't spontaneously act. You'll have to be extrinsically driven to get action, and you'll have to perceive way more advantage and disadvantage, or you won't act, because you'll be looking for more of a pleasure and avoid a pain down there. As a result of it, you'll tend to set a fantasy and then have self-doubt. So self-doubt is a feedback mechanism to let you know that what you're pursuing is not really congruent with what you value most. And many people think there's a weakness and they want to blame things in the past for this. But I've worked with thousands of individuals, and the second they are setting goals that are not higher on their values, or that they're fantasies and they're not strategically objectively structured, they're going to have self-doubt. Self-doubt is not a bad thing. Self-doubt is a feedback to let you know that what you're pursuing is either got pleasure without pain, positive without negative, and it's skewed to one side with some sort of subjective bias, and it's not really an objective, which means even-minded and balanced, and it's not aligned to your highest value. So the second you set a goal that is truly congruent with your highest value, you are anticipating the challenges that are going to be experienced along the journey of it, and you've already planned out strategically with foresight what are the downsides and how do you handle them and how do you mitigate the risks. Your brain automatically doesn't have self-doubt. It has confidence. Now, let me give you another example here. I've used this before, so some of you may have been online when I've heard this in a or you've heard this in a different context. If I walked up to you and I said, you are always positive, never negative, always kind, never cruel, always generous, never stingy, always giving, never taking, always peaceful, never wrathful, always considerate, never inconsiderate. There, as I'm saying that to you, there's a part of you whispering in your head and thinking of all the times you were stingy, negative, doubtful, questions, etc. And you would automatically have a kind of a internal psychostat, like a thermostat, let you know that that's not exactly it. I'm not always that way. And if I was to come to you and I would say, in other words, you would not have certainty. And if I came to you and I said, you're always mean, you're never nice, you're always cruel, you're never kind, you're always wrathful, never peaceful, always negative, never positive, always inconsiderate, never considerate, always stingy, never generous, you would immediately have memories of times when you were being generous and kind and stuff. You go, no, that's not true. You couldn't be certain that was true. But if I said to you, sometimes you're nice, sometimes you're mean, sometimes you're kind, sometimes you're cruel, sometimes you're positive, sometimes negative, sometimes one side and the other side, you'd immediately go, yes, that's true. You only have certainty when you are setting objectives, when you have a balanced orientation. The executive center in the brain is designed to mitigate risks, deal with probability of outcomes, and make you foresight and think out with strategies to neutralize fantasies that's going to have a one side without the other. And anytime you are not living objectively and living by highest priority, where that executive center comes online, the amygdala wants a pleasure without a pain, and it sets up a fantasy. And the moment you set up one side of a pole of a fantasy, your other side of doubt and anxiety and fear come in. Not as a mistake, not as a weakness, but as a normal biological response in the brain to get you objective, to get you centered again. If you're not meditating in advance on the evils, as they used to call by the Stoics, and thinking of the downsides and preparing for and mitigating the risks, and you're setting up a fantasy, you don't have a real objective, and you're designed to have self-doubt. So anytime you set something that is not highest on your values as a goal, you're going to have self-doubt. Anytime you set up a fantasy that's one-sided and not both-sided, you're going to have self-doubt. Self-doubt is not a weakness. It's not something that's something you go, oh, I got it because my mom was that way or that. None of that. Don't ever blame anything on the outside. Understand that everything is on the way, not in the way. That behavior, just like negative thinking, just like anxiety, just like fear, phobia, all these are not weaknesses. They're feedback mechanisms guiding you to set real goals in real times with real strategies that are objectives. And the moment you do, and you're living according to your highest value, because that's where it is, you take action. Anytime you're setting a goal that is, you haven't strategized and broken it down into small enough bites, and you assume that there's going to be all upsides, no downsides, your brain is going to bring out the downsides intuitively. Your intuition is always going to reveal to you the side you're unwilling to see. So it's designed that way. So I just want to make sure that that's clear, that because people think, and I've got a weakness, I do it. There's nothing wrong with them. I take the same individual that's been running a story that they've got self-doubt for 10 years and that's stopping them and sabotaging them and everything else. And what we find is that they're injecting the values of others that aren't really highest on your values. Let me elaborate on what that means. We've all been probably in some infatuation somewhere in our life where we've been really enamored, really infatuated, and put somebody in a pedestal and then stopped doing what was normally important to us and gone into lower values and tried to meet their needs for fear of rejection, fear of loss of that person we're infatuated with. And we started doing things that weren't normally our daily routines in order to fit in and try to be like them and be with them. And the moment we do, we go down to lower values and we self-depreciate. And then we wonder why we cannot consistently do that. And then we think, oh, okay, we're sabotaging. We're not sabotaging. We're getting feedback that we're attempting to be somebody we're not in order to be in a relationship that we've got on a pedestal instead of a match, not somebody that's a match. So anytime you put people on pedestal, inject their values in your life and try to live by their values, you're going to have self-doubt. You are designed to have that, to let you know that you're putting people on pedestals instead of putting them in your heart, and you're not, and you're going away from your highest value into something that you think that they expect, and you're fear of losing them if you don't do it. and you're trying to be somebody you're not, and you're envying them and imitating them instead of living true to you. And the moment you do, self-doubt and fear and anxieties are all those compensatory responses to that outcome, that objective, or that goal. If you set real goals with real time, with real strategies that are balanced and objectives that are aligned with your real values and don't have fantasies, the self-doubt disappears. Because I've taken people who thought they had self-doubt for years, cracked their fantasies, got them out of subordinate, and the breakthrough experience that I do, when I have people up on pedestals like that, or people have people on pedestals, and then they inject these values and they try to live in values that aren't theirs, they automatically self-depreciate. Just like the cat, as Einstein said, if you're a cat and you're expecting to swim like a fish because you're admiring a fish's ability to swim, and you beat yourself up because I can't swim, if you're a fish expecting to climb a tree like a cat and go, oh, God, I wish I could do that, and then you beat yourself up. It's because you're trying to be inauthentic. When you are setting authentic goals that are congruent, self-doubt dissolves. And it doesn't matter what you've been through, your childhood or whatever, it's not what it is. Unless you've been subordinating to somebody there, unless you're trying to live in their expectations, unless you're trying to live by some tradition, convention, or some morality that's not you, these are all symptoms of not being authentic to ourselves, not living by our highest value. So anyway, that's just my opening line.
And then Dr. DeMartini, some people feel that self-belief is vain. They see it as a negative thing. Is that a shame and a guilt that is driving that? And is that a belief hindering their growth?
Self-belief, every time you set a goal that is aligned with your highest values. See, I have a high value on researching and teaching. So anytime I have a goal in the area of research and teaching, I tend to act on it, get it done, achieve it, and I believe in myself. I believe I can do it. I know I'll walk my talk and I'll get my result. There's nothing unwise or unwellness oriented about self-belief. Now, cocky pride and an exaggeration of self and a perception that you're successful in things and exaggerating that will humble you. Because the second you get cocky, you'll attract events to humble you. Pride before the fall, hubris. But self-belief is not. It's not cocky. It's just confident and certain that what you say you're going to do, you'll do. I'm certain that I'm going to be researching daily. I'm certain that I'm going to be doing some sort of an educational process daily. I'm not certain that I'm going to go and work out every day, although I do periodically. I don't do it every day. That's not my highest value. So if I set a goal that's going to do that, I'm going to hesitate. I'll procrastinate. I'll frustrate. And if I have an expectation, I'm supposed to be doing that, I should be doing that. Anytime you hear yourself saying, I should, I ought to, I supposed to, I got to, I have to, it isn't you. It's an injected value by some outside authority that you may not have identified. And whenever you're setting those, you're guaranteed to make yourself self-depreciate and lose your confidence because you're setting your goal. Setting a goal is not really important to you. You just think it is. So self-belief, true self-belief is a healthy response. Nothing unwise about it. I have confidence and belief that I will do what I say when it comes to researching and teaching, but not cooking or driving or the workouts, although I do a bit. It's not high enough on my values to expect that for myself. But if I have an expectation to do something that's low in my values, I'm going to have self-doubt. I'm going to depreciate myself. You are designed to depreciate yourself anytime you do low priority things. That's why if you're not filling your day with high-priority actions that inspire you, your day is going to fill up with low-priority distractions that don't, and your self-worth and self-belief are going to go down. And that's not that's perfect. They could have asked for a more magnificent feedback system to let you know you're not living congruently, you're not authentic, and the universe is giving you feedback to try to get you authentic. Your physiology, psychology, sociology, and theology around you is all trying to get you to live authentically, live with equity, and live not putting people on pedestals or pits, but put them in your heart, not trying to get them to live in your values, not try to you getting to live in their values, but you living according to your values and honoring them, doing them, living theirs. So self-belief is healthy. Cockiness, self-righteousness, inflated pride, exaggeration of self will be humbled because it's not you. The proud you is not you. The shamed you is not you. The exaggerated or the minimized isn't you. There's a difference between pseudo-elevated self-esteem and pseudo-depressed self-esteem and true self-worth. Your true self-worth is the synthesis of those two polarities where you're up manic and you're down depressed. You're elated, depressed, high, low, inflated, deflated, self-righteous, self-righteous, proud, and shame. Those are the two polarities. Neither one of those are you. Those are personas, masks, facades that you're wearing trying to cover up the real being. And true self-worth occurs at the center of where you are being yourself. So if you live by your highest values, where your identity revolves around, and live by priority and delegate lower priority things, you're not doing low priority things, your self-worth is going to be strong. Your image of yourself is going to be confident. You're going to have certainty, and you're going to act, and you're going to get an accomplishment. And that's not cocky. In fact, you're grateful because you're doing what you love and you're loving what you do and you're seeing things as a feedback to get there. It doesn't make you cocky. It makes you grateful for what happens. Cocky is when you're actually assuming that you're living one-sided fantasies. And humbleness is when you're actually having to face the other side. So the center is not high or low. In fact, if you start to think you're successful, you're probably on your way down depurposing. And if you start to think you're a failure, you're probably going back up and repurposing. But if you just stay focused on highest value, you're maintaining purpose. I call myself a man on a mission, not a man of success, a man on a mission. I don't get attached to the idea labeled success and failure. I don't even like those terms. I think those terms are distracting. And when you think you're successful, you have a short-term gratification. You think you've arrived, you have little experience, and you have a small vision. When you have a long-term vision and you something you want to contribute to the planet, it's all on the way and you're grateful for the next step. So we're not here to go boasting, exaggerating. We're here to be centered, authentic, and true self-worth and true self-belief automatically occurs if you're setting goals that are congruent.
So Dr. DeMartini, how do we keep ourselves centered that we don't get cocky or deflated in terms of what we want to do?
Well, the addiction to inflation creates deflation. The addiction to pride tracks humbling circumstances. You know, I think that one is narcissistic, the other is altruistic, and one brings on the other. If we go in our business and we think narcissistic, we're better than that, we eventually get humbled. If we go in altruistic, we eventually get pissed off because we're doing something for nothing. So if we're trying to get something for nothing or try to do something for nothing, neither one of those are sustainable. We have to find equity and authenticity in order to have sustainable, fair exchange with people. And so, yeah, that's how do we do it? By living by priority. I'm sure some of you have been on with me before, and you'll know I say this over and over again. But if you're not filling your day with high priority actions that inspire you, that you spontaneously can't wait to do and love doing, your body and mind and your life is going to have entropy. It's going to break down. Because it's going to let you know that you're not being authentic. And that is not a mistake. It's not a weakness. It's not a problem. It's not a flaw. It is a normal biological response for living organisms to do that when they're not being authentic to what they're designed for. Each of us have a structure and a mission and a hierarchy of values. And if we live according to it, our highest value is the one that allows us to maximize the most amount of transformation of judgments into love, from chaos into order, from self-depreciation to appreciation. So if we don't live by priority, we have no one to look at other than ourselves. We're just not choosing to do it. And we're going to have chaos. Chaos is a feedback system to let us know we're not living authentically to what's really valuable to us. I learned a long time ago to make a list of every single thing on a daily basis, write down the highest priority actions you can do today that can help you fulfill your mission on Earth. And if you haven't defined that, you need to go to my value determination process on my website and go do the value determination exercise. It's complimentary, it's free. You can do it again a week from now and a month from now and every 3 months to keep it current. But take a look at what your life really, really demonstrates. Because if you're setting a goal based on fantasies and whims instead of what you actually have as a value that's really highest on your value, you're going to get symptoms. And the symptoms are going to give you feedback. And the self-depreciation is going to give you that feedback. But this doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. It just means that you're not listening to your intuition and not going by what's inspiring to you. And you're letting the world around you do its job to give you feedback, to let you know you're not being authentic. Everything is kicking your butt to get you onto what's out of the rut into what's really true for you. So the prioritization is the key. Identifying what's truly highest on your priority, to what is really, truly you feel is your calling and mission in life, whatever that may be. Don't judge it relative to anybody else. Just go after what's true for you and prioritize your daily basis. Do something that serves people so you can get paid to do it, and then delegate with the cost, the income you get, delegate everything else so you have lower priority things. Because if you're not delegating, you can't live an inspired life. Pardon me. Unless you got somebody around taking care of everything around you, which is delegating. How are you going to live an inspired life if you're doing low priority things and desperate things? Not going to happen. You have the responsibility. The universe rewards people for living by priority, living authentically, doing it in a way that serves people, having a fair transactional exchange of it economically, having a portion of that, investing a portion of it, and taking the rest of it to pay people to do lower priority things that they're inspired to do, not you, but they're inspired to do it. And then you help the economy, you help yourself, you get rewarded, you serve people, you have fulfillment in life. And it's deeply meaningful to be able to make a difference in other people's lives. So if you're doing something you really love to do and getting paid for it, you found your niche in life. And that does give you confidence and self-worth and all the things we're talking about. So self-doubt is not an enemy, it's a feedback. And I have to pound that into some people, because some people are so programmed by the self-help movement, the positive thinking movement, which screws people up because it makes them think there's supposed to be a one-sided world out there. Always nice, never mean, always kind, never cruel. Your grandmother tells you, be kind, don't be cruel, be nice, don't be mean, be positive, don't be negative. Nobody is one-sided. And it's a waste of time to go and pursue fantasies about how your life's going to be. You're not going to get it. Face the reality. You have both sides. Embrace it. Use it wisely. Embrace your hero and villain. Embrace other people's hero and villain. If you support people's values, they're nice. If you challenge their values, they can be mean. Don't expect anybody to be one-sided. Don't expect any goals to be one-sided. Don't expect anything in life to be one-sided. It's got the pair of opposites. There's a dialectic in the pairs of opposites known throughout the ages, and all the wise individuals knew that. Be wise, understand it, set goals that are real objectives, which means even you're neutral and not polarized and not subjectively biased with one side. Our amygdala misleads us into the idea of getting a prey without a predator. Our objectives know that's not possible. You need prey and predator to have fitness. If you had prey and you overate and you had gluttony, you get no fitness. If you had a predator and you had emaciation and starvation, no fitness. But you put the two together, you get fitness. Maximum growth and development occurs at the border of support and challenge, positive, negatives, objectivity. So live by priority, live objectively, use your executive center, the forebrain, not your hindbrain, and quit going after fantasies that aren't really your values, and quit going after things that don't have strategies and you're not ready to handle the downsides. Or otherwise, you're going to have anxieties, self-doubt, et cetera, and it's going to stop you from wanting to take action because you're anxious, because you're going after something that's not obtainable and you intuitively know it. And that's your body doing its job and your psyche doing its job.
And Dr. DeMartini, through these times that we're going through now, there is a lot of people that's going after new ventures and new ideas or businesses. How can they effectively prepare for that? They've got a bit of uncertainty and doubt around if it's going to work or not. What advice could you give around that?
Well, that's called planning. Foresight is better than hindsight. You're not going to plan every detail, possibly, but you can know that the more you put into the details, the higher the probability. The master is the one who focuses on every detail. You know, as Phelps, the swimmer, 22 medals anyway, he used to visualize in his mind's eye his ideal swim, and he would take everything, and I mean, every movement, every stroke, everything, every possible obstacle. If there's a disturbance in the water, if there's anything that ever happened, he thought, how would I handle that? And how do I use it to my advantage? And if this happens, how do I use it to my advantage? How do I reduce this probability? He thought things in advance, and he was the most meddled individual, but he saw it in his mind's eye. So planning the business and making sure you think through and make sure that there's a real need. I'm amazed at how many entrepreneurs go out there, have a fantasy, borrow money, take all the risks on a fantasy they haven't even found out if there's a real need for. They're projecting self-righteously an assumption that they know what the market needs instead of finding out what the market's asking for. And if they do, they're going to end up flopping because they're going after something that nobody wants. And they're having to push marketing and cost, and they're burning through cash flow. And then they burden themselves, and they get stressed, and then they're out of their executive center, and then they're into impulses, and they want to They look for a magic bullet to save them, and then they go out under. It's wiser to be patient and to perceive in advance and make sure that you really have a market. Make sure there's a market out there, or make sure you're doing things to create the market and plan it out. When I opened up my practice, I had a business plan, and I went through about probably 40 plans of other people and took the best of the best of everybody else's plan and integrated it into my plan and thought of stuff that wasn't even in those plans. And then went to the bank and I got my money from the bank. But in the process of doing it, I had in my mind a clear idea of what I was going to do the moment I opened up my office. Now, there were some things I didn't anticipate and some things that I anticipated so well that I was it exceeded my expectations when the results. But I thought it through and I took out the risk. Our anxiety, our phobias, are a result of our philias. And our philias are fantasies. And therefore we create a nightmare. Every fantasy has a nightmare. Every philia, phobia. Every relation, depression. And so anytime you're setting something and you haven't thought through what are all the downsides and meditated on all the evils, as they call it, and think of all the downsides, what all could go wrong. That's the problem with positive thinking. It really screws your head up because it makes you think, oh, I don't want to look at all that. If you're not looking at that and mitigating it, your brain is going to intuitively bring it up to make sure you're thinking about it, because that's what anxiety is and fears are. Those fears are feedback to you that you're setting a fantasy without thinking and don't have a plan. And so you have an anxiety. What could happen? Fear is an assumption that you're about to experience in the future more drawbacks and benefits. So if you haven't anticipated them, thought of how you would use them to your advantage, find out the upsides to it and how to mitigate them and reduce those probabilities, then they're going to show up in your mind to let you know you're setting a fantasy and you're afraid to face those. Because sometimes you're afraid to face them because you might not want to act on the fantasy, but you need to do that, or otherwise you go after a fantasy and then flop, and then your fear came near. Wiser to think in advance and get mentorship and pre-plan. And if you're not clear about it, get some advice, read some books, get some mentorships, ask questions, do these types of these webinars. But make sure in your mind you've got a clear pathway where you see, and you make sure there's a demand for your service. And then when you know there's a demand, you don't have anxiety. You only have anxiety for the things you didn't anticipate and you're anticipating. And by the way, there's no fear of the unknown. There's fear of what you're anticipating because you haven't planned. There's no fear of the unknown. There's fear of the content in your mind that you're assuming could happen that you don't have mitigated. And you don't know how to use it and turn it into on the way or how to reduce the probability of it. So you didn't plan. And the moment you plan it out and think, okay, if this happens, here's what I'll do. You don't have a fear about it. That fear is gone. And you think, okay, what else do I have an anxiety about? Well, this could happen. Great. How do I do it? I go and find out if there's really a need for that product. If I do, I tweak the product. If it doesn't, and if I now know what it is, now I don't have the anxiety because I know I've got a demand. So all of your fears are your friends. All of your self-doubts are your friends. They're feedback to let you know you haven't planned an objective. You haven't strategized it out. You're going on a whim with some degree of upsides without downsides. You're not anticipating those, and you don't have a real objective. Again, objectivity means even-minded, not positive thinking. I know I beat this dead horse, but I get so many people coming in from the positive thinking movement that are anxious and sabotaging and frightened and then hesitating and then flopping because they don't use their objective mind. The executive part of the brain is there for a reason. Your amygdala is a subcortical area of the brain that we have that's in common with the animals. Our executive center is something we have that gives meaning and purpose and direction and inspiration and planning, and we create things. Elon Musk just made his own spacecraft working with NASA to go up to the space station. That was 100,000 people thinking of every possible thing that could go wrong, plan it out, mitigate it, precision it, practice it, perform it. That's why they're successful at doing it, achieved it. It's not because they winged it, not because they had fantasies, not because they had positive thinking. It's because they thought of everything and they dealt with every single thing that could go wrong and they're prepared for it. If you do that, you're going to go on and you're going to launch to the space station. You'll be in the stratosphere with your achievements.
And Dr. DeMartini, how do we distinguish between emotions and intuition? If you're going after a project, do we know it's true or not?
Okay, well, I'm going to define an emotion, first of all. An emotion is a subjectively biased perception that's lopsided. So if you're infatuated with somebody, you're conscious of the upsides, you're unconscious of the downsides. So you have a subjective confirmation bias for the upsides, a subjective disconfirmation bias on the negative sides. You have a false positive on the positives. You're seeing things that aren't there you're seeing things that are there that aren't there, and a false negative on the negative. You're not seeing things that are there, not seeing what's there. So when you have these biases like that, you have an emotion. And if you have resentment, it's the opposite. You're conscious of the downside, unconscious of the upside. And you're having a false bias on the negatives and a false positive on the negatives and false negative on the positives. And again, a confirmation bias, disconfirmation bias. So anytime you have bias, anytime you have subjective opinions, anytime you are skewed and you're not seeing both sides, you're going to have an emotion. Emotion are polarized feelings that offer you feedback to let you know you're not on objective. And most people think, I want to get my emotions out. Well, if you want to do it, you want to be a fool. Fools live with emotions. You're not going to manage money with emotions. You're not going to manage relationship with emotion. You're not going to be a social leader with emotions. You're going to be feelings, yes, but don't confuse feelings with emotions. Feelings have two types: polarized feelings, which are emotions, and synthesized feelings, which is gratitude, love, inspiration, enthusiasm, certainty, and presence. Those are leadership roles. Those are transcendental feelings. Those feelings are what just took Elon Musk to space. He was inspired. His heart was open. He was grateful. He was enthused. Those are the signs that you have a real objective and you matched it and you got a result. And it's a confirmation that you're living authentically. But the second you get a polarized emotion, you get infatuated or get resentful, attractive or repelled, or skew things and distort things, that's an emotion. So emotion is a subcortical response to a skewed subjective bias. And transcendental feelings are an objective response and a confirmation that you're living authentically. So I'm not against feelings. I just want you to understand that emotional feelings are feedback. They're essential in your life because whenever you have a distortion, they're going to be there for you as a feedback to let you know you're not centered. So you have impulses for pleasure and instincts from pain. That's a subcortical area. It's the nucleus accumbens and striatum pallidum. And they're basically wanting a pleasure without a pain, trying to avoid a pain. And they separate into polarities, which is polar, like poles of a magnet. They get farther apart. They're positive feedback loops that get further dramatized with emotion. That's why these riots that occurred in America are classical emotional polarities. It's irrational and subjective and biased, and it's just irrational as shit. Then what happens is a person that actually has intuition is trying to neutralize those polarities. So your impulse and instinct is trying to dramatize those polarities, and your intuition is trying to neutralize it. So if you're cocky or if you're infatuated with somebody, your intuition is trying to point out the downsides. When you're resentful to somebody, your intuition is trying to point out the meaning. There's got to be meaning in what's happening. There's got to be a downside to that guy I'm infatuated with. Your intuition is trying to bring it back to the center to get you objective. Your intuition is a negative feedback loop. A negative means it's trying to bring you back to homeostasis and bring you back to objectivity. So your intuition is trying to take you back to reason and trying to make an objective. Your impulses and instincts is trying to get you out of reason and going into impulse and instincts. They're designed for fight or flight responses and rest and digest responses. They're there to accentuate the emotions, to get the adrenaline going so we can capture the prey quickly, run after the prey, and run away from the predator. So if you're into fight or flight and rest and digest and you're highly polarized and you're subjectively biased, the world on the outside is going to run you because anything you infatuate or resent is going to occupy space and time in your mind and run you. You're not running you. The world outside you, because of your misperceptions, are running you. But the second you're poised and you're present and you're purposeful and you're prioritized and you're patient, you'll be productive. And in that state, that objectivity, your intuition is guiding you to do. But most people confuse feelings with intuition. No, it's a neutralizer of emotions. Intuition is a neutralizer of emotions. There's so much crap written about it, but it's a neutralizer. It's a negative feedback trying to bring you homeostasis and trying to bring you balanced life. It's trying to help you bring wellness, and it's trying to help you empower all seven areas of your life. In the Breakthrough Experience program, I'm distinguishing these two things, the impulse, the instinct, the intuition, and what it does to master all seven areas of life. And there's absolutely no reason why you can't empower all of them by knowing the distinctions and knowing how to ask questions, which is what the DeMartini method's for, to ask questions, to equilibrate the mind and bring it back into objectivity so you can set real goals and achieve real things instead of these impulses and instincts that are fantasies. So many people are impulsive and then it peters out. Weeks later, they give up on it. If you're having to be motivated to go after what you say you want to do, it's not what you want to do. I don't need motivation to do what I do. I get inspired daily to get up and research, write, travel, teach, even though lately I haven't been traveling as much.
And Dr. DeMartini, it's quite popular now that people say you have to get rid of your ego get rid of your ego. What is your definition of ego and what is your take on that?
Well, the Eastern Buddhist mysticism, some of the New Age infiltration of that has confused the original Freudian language on ego. The ego, according to Freud, there were three partite aspects of the psyche by Freud. One was the ego, the other one was the superego, the other one was the id. When you're living by your highest value, you're waking up your ego. Your ego is your I, the identity that you wrap your life around. It's not pride. It's not shame. It's your I. It's reasonable. It's objective. It's authentic, etc. That's what the true ego meant identity. It's meant the essential self, the true I. It has been turned into, in nihilistic Buddhist constructs, it's been turned into the idea that there's a universal ocean and this I is insignificant and it holds you back. Now, what happens is when you're living by lower values, you have what is called the id. And the id, when you're living by lower values, you shrink your objectives. You don't go after objectives, go after impulses. And it's an impulsive and instinctual center that's ungoverned and uncontrolled. And that's why they call it the idiot, because iota meant tiny id, tiny psyche, shrunken psyche. Because when you live by your highest values, you tend to achieve things and you tend to set to bigger goals and to keep setting bigger goals and building momentum. That was associated with an expansion. And the id was a contraction of psyche, of potential. Those are accurate. But because of misinterpretation, the superego, which was the injected values of outer authorities, that then makes you feel proud if you live by their values and shamed if you don't, confuse the false ego of pride with the true ego, because that's an inflated part. But when you're living by your highest values, you have self-worth and you can continue to go and expand who you are. But when you go proud, you tend to exaggerate what you do, set goals that are too big in too short a time frame, and then get humbled. The true ego doesn't humble you. It sets real objectives. The false ego automatically humbles you and you get pride. And it's that pursuit of the fantasy and the exaggerated that is the one that the Buddhists are really referring to, the false ego, and not letting that interfere with the true calling. Because the second your objective, your human will matches the order of the universe, because you're not judging. You're not trying to change you relative to others or others relative to you. You're seeing things in order and you're grateful and you're using, in a sense, you're aligning with what actually is. Om Tat Sat, as the Eastern mystic said. In that state, you're graced, you're inspired, you take action spontaneously, you tend to achieve things, you tend to want to tackle bigger problems and solve bigger mysteries, you want to keep probing. That's an expansion of your being, a greater pursuit of the grand divine design, as you will, the master plan of the universe. But the false ego is the one that's going to make you go into pride and cocky and think you're successful. A man on a mission or an individual on a mission is different than a person who thinks they're successful and cocky. So that's where the false ego has been confused. You need to get rid of that. But you don't. What it is a symptom to let you know that you're not living authentic and that you're subordinating and trying to live in other people's values. So that's a symptom that will get humbled automatically. You don't have to worry about it being humbled. It will be humbled. And it's there to try to get you back into your own center. When you're centered and not eccentrically polarized into pride and shame and exaggerated and depressed self-image or whatever, self-esteem, and you're really authentic with true self-worth, you grow. So your true ego is not something to be ridding yourself of. The false ego, which has been confused in all the literature, is a thing that people are saying you have to transcend. You have to sacrifice that animal nature for the angelic divine nature inside you.
And Dr. DeMartini, you mentioned positive thinking. So do positive affirmations have any impact on self-belief?
If you say to yourself, I'm always up, I'm never down, I'm always positive, never negative, always kind, never cruel, you're going to beat yourself up and your bullshit meter is going to go off in seconds. Just prove it. Try it. You'll see that you'll go, no, not, you're going to have uncertainty. So a positive statement is not an affirmation. As much as the mass market and the new age people think, the word affirmation comes from its root in Egyptian words of power, which are basically to make firm in one's mind. Affirmation meant a condition of firmness in one's mind. So if I say that I'm always up, I'm never down, always positive every day, I'm getting happier and happier and everything else, I will never have firmness in my mind. I'll have uncertainty in my mind. But if I say that whether I'm supported or challenged, whether I'm praised or reprimanded, I know that both of them are synchronous and guiding me to my authentic self. Now it's a statement, a checkup from the neck up to letting you know what's going on in your life to make sure you're real. But if you say that every day and every way I'm getting happier and happier and happier, your bullshit meter is going to go off and it's going to go bullshit, bullshit. So just that's not what an affirmation meant. And affirmations, look, what's happened in our world today, the masses believe that love, they've confused love with infatuation. They've confused enthusiasm with excitement. They've confused a mission with passion. And now they've confused the true ego with a false ego. Because our animal nature wants to avoid a pain and seek a pleasure, and it wants fantasies. And then it sets up anxieties and fears and self-depreciation to try to guide it back to the authentic self. Everything's a feedback system. So all that is trying to get you to live authentically. So positive thinking by itself is delusional. I mean, if positive thinking has a place. When you're down and you're not seeing, but you're angry and resentful, you need positive thinking to find out and balance that out. When you're infatuated and you're gullible and somebody's selling you smoke and on Mars, a special deal and how to get rich overnight kind of thing, you need a healthy skepticism. Skepticism is designed to break down gullibility and positive thinking is designed for negativity. But you're not to get it above equilibrium. You're trying to bring them both into equilibrium. You need skepticism when you're gullible and fantasizing. And you need positive thinking to get you up. So positive thinking is only half the equation. By itself, it's not. Now, if you're sitting there beating yourself up, it's because you've got a fantasy. So adding more positive thinking to that is not going to help. Going and find the upsides to what you're fearing will, and find the downsides to the fantasies will, and homeostate it, which is what your intuition's attempting to do, that will help. But one by itself, no. And it's been proven. I mean, I could show you article after article, article and book after book, debunking some of this positive thinking myth. So, and people say, well, weren't you on The Secret? And didn't you talk about that? I never said that on The Secret. Other people may have. I was trying to balance people even on that. I'm not a promoter of that. I stopped that when I was 30 years old. And I gave that up after 2-year research on myself about positive thinking. And I gave that up. I realized those are neophytes, not for masters. I love what Epictetus said. Epictetus said that at first people go on life and they blame others, then they blame themselves, and then they realize there's nothing to blame. Everything is actually doing what it's designed to do, including the people around you responding the way they do that you don't like because you're addicted to praise and somebody criticizes you, you're hurt. But the criticism is breaking your pride down and making you back into equilibrium, get you authentic. If you understand that, you realize there's nothing there to blame, nothing to blame in you or them. It's just something to understand. The wiser you are, the less the blame and the less the credit. The more you are centered and the more objective you are, the more grateful you are because you achieve and you help other people be themselves by not trying to fix them into fantasies that you impose on them.
And Dr. DeMartini, my last question I got for you is you talk about the three things we have control over. Can you please elaborate on that, what we've got control over?
Well, we have control over our perceptions, decisions, and actions, our sensory nerves, our internerves, our interneurons, and our motor neurons. And anytime we have a goal that's not one of those three, we don't have control over it. So when somebody says, I'd like to make $1 million a year, okay, fine. That's not a goal. That's a nice result, but you don't have control over $1 million a year. What you do have control over is that let's say you make 10 calls and every 10 calls you make a close on a sale and the average close on the sale is $1,000. So every 10 calls gives you $1,000. So if you want $1,000, which is $1 million, you need to do 10,000 calls. So you have control over making 10,000 calls. You have control over possibly the how well you use your articulation and motor responses to word things in a way that matches their values to fill a need and maybe increase the closing from 1 to 10 to 2 to 10. Then you have less calls to make. But you don't have control over the million. You have control over the actions that get you that million. You have control over the perceptions that it takes to get that million. And you have control over the decisions of the actions and the perceptions that get you there. If you're not going and doing what you love and filling your day with high priority things and delegating the rest, or you're not linking what you're doing with your perceptions, so no matter what happens, it's on the way to help you fulfill that, you're not going to be using your potential to the maximum. So learning how to take control over the things you do have control over is the key, and not go after things that are delusions. You have no control over somebody else's actions. You have control over how you interact with them and how you can increase the probability of them being engaged in what you would like them to do if you give them enough benefits and their values to do it. But you have to look at what you have control over, and that's your perception, decisions, and actions. Make sure that no goal is anything but a perception, decision, action, and you'd be surprised how impactful that is. You can have a result attached to a goal, but the goal needs to be broken down. And that's the difference between a strategy and a fantasy. A fantasy is I want to be $1 million a year. A goal is I'm going to make 300 calls or 10,000 calls. I'm going to average one out of 10. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do it so many a day. I'm going to call between these hours. These are most efficient hours, and plan it out and implement it. And I get my $1 million.
Well, this was just a small sample of what Dr. DeMartini has to share. If you'd love to continue learning from Dr. DeMartini, then please click the subscribe button so that you're notified when we add the next episode. If you'd love to find out more about Dr. DeMartini and his work, then please log on to our website, drdemartini.com, and use the online chat function to talk to a member of our DeMartini team. We'd really love to get to know you and to understand what you're wanting to achieve so that we can best guide you through the appropriate education session to achieve your goals and dreams. We'd also love to invite you to join us in the DeMartini Stay Inspired Facebook group, which you can access by linking to demartini.inc/inspired. Our goal in the community is to help you to clarify your vision, stay focused and inspired, and take the appropriate actions to empower all seven areas of your life. So join us by linking to demartini.inc/inspired. That's it for this episode. We look forward to sharing more inspiration from Dr. DeMartini shortly. Until next time, stay focused, stay inspired.